RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you have discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on the various episodes. How are you doing this week, Josh?
I'm doing well, and I would just like to say to you, Toi moi drog.
Excuse me?
Toi moi drog, comrade.
No, you know what? I'm going to have to teach you Russian at some point here, I think.
Okay. All right. We'll have to work on that.
Yeah, that's a little... Boys moi.
I'll drink more vodka.
Then you drink vodka, I drink vodka, and then we don't care how bad our Russian sounds. How about
Perfect.
That?
Perfect. All works out for everybody.
Yeah. speaking of vodka... I don't know where this is going. What's the name of this week's episode?
That was a fantastic segue. Hold on. I've got to catch my breath.
Mm. Woo.
Okay.
Did I
hurt
your neck with that whiplash there?
Woo. No,
I really thought the airbags were going to go off.
all right. Well, we have a lot to talk about. This was a phenomenal episode. So let me tell you about it, and then let's start breaking it down. Okay, we're in season 2, episode 22.
Yeah,
the next to last episode. Jeez, I can't believe this is the next to last episode. I'm already drooling for the summer, and we still have one more. So. Okay, so Streets of Fire. That was the name of the episode, Streets of Fire. It aired on May 7th, 2014, written by Jake Coburn and Ben Sokolowski, directed by Nick Kopis. Okay?
Yes.
And as you know, the streets are on fire.
We don't need no water. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's all. Yeah. Well, they're also, strangely enough, the streets are also falling on Laurel. amongst all this chaos of Sebastian Blood's attack on Starling City with Slade's Mirakuru army, many, many stories are told. While Slade watches Rome burn, lots going on. Oliver has to save Laurel. Diggle and Felicity, they fight for their life against Ravager. Lance and the police, Quentin Lance and the police, they're battling at the station. Sarah, she finds out she can be a hero, and Thea, she's taking up shots with her dad.
Oh my gosh!
So much going on.
Wow, that's right. This episode really is packed.
It is. And everybody, every character had their own story. It seemed like. And some of them kind of, you know, they crossed over each other, but for the most part, boy, it just, it almost did give me whiplash going back and forth and who are they going to talk about next and all right. So I'm excited to talk about this, and I'm even more excited for next week's episode to air.
Oh, just don't get ahead of ourselves.
I won't. And actually it's kind of like Christmas, you know, it's like, I'm excited for it to get here, but I don't really want it to get here. 'Cause then I know. Right. It'll be over.
Right. So. I know. And, okay. So a lot of stuff to talk about here. Before we get to all of that, you want to help me sing this out here?
Okay. All right. Here all we right. go.
Happy birthday to you.
Happy birthday, dear Stephen.
Happy birthday to you.
That's going to be horrible on the Skype lag.
I'm not sure without the lag it would have been much better. And I apologize to everyone that had to hear me sing.
So Stephen is 33 years old. I guess when was it? His birthday was just the other day?
just a couple days ago, he put a message out on Facebook there. May 8th, I think, was his birthday. 33. Gosh, I wouldn't say he's a bit over, I don't know, 25 maybe. But I bet Oliver's knees are worse than mine.
That is probably true. I mean, he's used them more, I think, so.
He does use them a lot more. I sit here talking to you. I don't jump off roofs, so.
Exactly. All right, so, and then also we got word, I saw this come in just a little bit ago before we started recording this, and you had put in the notes that Mark Guggenheim, one of the producers and creators of the show, is going to be writing an X-Men comic pretty soon, a little universal crossover here.
Yeah.
He's going to be starting writing the X-Men title, just X-Men, not Uncanny X-Men, not Amazing X-Men, not All New X-Men, just X-Men, because there are a lot of these, starting with issue number 18. And he's taking over from Brian Wood, who is the current writer for that. So you can look forward to that. I think that is probably due either July or August, I think, is when that issue's coming out. So I'm sure we'll have a little bit to talk about once that issue comes out.
Yeah, and congratulations to Mr.
That's
Guggenheim.
Great. And then now this is more for, I guess, Jeff Johns and Andrew Kreisberg, but congratulations to them. The Flash was actually picked up as a show for next season. So there will be at least two shows. Well, actually, there will be three shows. I'll tell you the third one here in a second. But there will be Flash and Arrow will both be on CW. So very excited about that. That will give us something else to talk about. I'd love to be able to do a Flash podcast. But I think what I'll do is if there is significant stuff on the Flash episodes next year, I think I might throw like a little 2-minute segment in here, if you would allow me, on our Green Justice podcast called In a Flash, and I would just do like the references.
I think that sounds great. I'll definitely be watching the show. So
what I may do is see how best that works. I may throw it in at the end, or maybe I'll just do little. Maybe I won't actually put it in with the Green Justice. Maybe I'll just have its own little feed that are, you know, like little 2-minute long things. It'll just be, you know, we'll have a little zip 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 sound effect noise, and I'll just read the references or something like that.
All right, well, we'll see what kind of tweak that over the summer and see what you come up with.
Yeah, and then as if having two shows from DC Comics on TV next season wasn't enough, there are actually going to be five shows. So DC is dominating the comic book spectrum here on TV. We know that Marvel's got two shows. They're going to have Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. coming back for a second season and Agent Carter for a first season. So we'll have Arrow back for its third season, Flash for its first season, and then DC also has Gotham, which is premiering on Fox. That's going to be a kind of a Jim Gordon cop show. It's I think Bruce Wayne's like 12 years old or something like that in the show. I'm not completely sold on this yet. I don't know if you had a chance to see the preview or the promo for it, but
I did actually. It actually sold me more than I expected to. But
I think it looks good. I think they did a good job of putting that package together.
Yeah, they did.
But still, the fact that you've got all of these supervillains as like kids, you know, like teens or
young thugs,
or what?
Young thugs.
Young thugs. Yeah.
Which was the first? That was the working title, actually.
I don't know.
Well, and it's if you listen to the show, you know, it's pretty well known that I'm not real heavily into the dark, you know, comics and the comic genre. So this, to me, when I first heard that they were doing it, didn't appeal to me much at all. But looking at, and like you said, it was very well put together. They can do a lot in a trailer and a promo kind of thing that looks good. The show itself may be a little too dark for my personal taste, but I'm sure it will be appealing to a lot of people that do like that stuff. So, and which is totally okay with me. You like what you like, so go for it.
Yeah. I don't know where I'm going to find the time to watch a bunch of these shows next
I don't either.
Season. So, and then NBC is going to have Constantine. That got picked up. So that's based on the Hellblazer comics. And some people may remember there's a Constantine movie with Keanu Reeves that came out about 7 or 8 years ago now, I guess. And then CW is going to have a third show. Technically, this is from the Vertigo line of comics, that, but DC also publishes that. It's called iZombie. And I wasn't too familiar with this, but basically it's a it's kind of like how did I put this to my wife earlier? I said it's kind of like True Calling meets The Walking Dead meets what's the female detective that just had a movie made about her from that fans really liked? Veronica Mars.
Oh, okay, yes.
So it's this girl that's, she needs to eat brains like once a week or once a month or something like that. So she works as a morgue technician, which allows her to get that. But she also gets like insight into what happened to these people when she eats their brains. And it's, I don't know, we'll see where this goes. It seems like it's right up kind of CW's alley. It's very kind of weird. It'll appeal to the Vampire Diaries kind of people, I think, but not sure if I'm going to watch that. I'm not a huge zombie fan. I watch Walking Dead, but it's not a genre that is near and dear to my heart. So if I had to drop something, that would probably be it.
Hmm. So interesting.
I think we're going to have enough to keep up with, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, completely.
But very exciting. It's a great time to be a comic book fan wanting to watch shows on TV. I think this is probably the most we've had at once on TV for a long time. So this will be about 7 different shows between the Marvel and DC here.
Whew, so, boy.
That's great. The
comic book genre is taking over the entertainment industry for sure. So
yeah.
Hopefully they don't oversaturate the idea, but they seem to have a wide variety of things. I think it's okay.
Yep. I think there's something for everybody here. So that's cool. All right. Well, let's get into talking about the Streets of Fire, which obviously we saw Starling City burning. Slade's Mirakuru army is doing quite a job tearing the city apart. And so I think that that is what the title of the episode was referring to. I mean, literally, we saw the streets on fire. I was trying to look up some other sort of, you know, things this could possibly mean. I think the one thing that was mentioned in the episode was Slade mentioning Rome burning. You know, the fact that Nero sang while Rome burned.
Uh-huh.
It was probably, you know, something else having to do with it. But I don't. Do you have any other takes on that title?
The Streets of Fire, right? Not the Rome burning, right?
Yeah, right.
I looked it up too, and the only thing I really found was the 1984 movie, and I'm pretty sure they weren't referencing that, but Streets of Fire.
Some rock and roll fable.
but I kind of agree with you. I mean, the whole idea was the Rome burning kind of idea, just kind of that theme kept popping up, but it wasn't anything so subtle this week. I mean, it was pretty straightforward telling you what was going on, which is kind of cool to me because it feels like the second act of a 3-act play. Mm-hmm. Last week it was City of Blood. This week, Streets of Fire. And it doesn't, again, I think I mentioned this last week, but now it feels like we're heading right toward the climax of this longer cinematic event. Mm-hmm. So I guess I'm okay with it not having the subtle references, although I really like talking about those, but
this was a kind of like a second act. I mean, every storyline in it put somebody in a bad situation, pretty much put everybody in a bad situation. I mean, the whole town's really in a bad place with Argus moving in, which was not completely unexpected. I find it interesting that there's an Argus facility really nearby, but the nearest military base is 300 miles away.
Well, they don't need to. There's an Argus base there, so.
Well, I guess so, but
The other thing that made me feel like, you know, this was more cinematic in rare Arrow form, it's not the last 3 weeks here of the season aren't taking place in real time. I mean, it's really literally taking place all in one night.
Oh, that is true.
Which is rare for the series. So, but
that's true. Yeah, because I really like the fact that when they picked up where all the cliffhangers left off last week, they kind of backtracked and showed you like the scene from the end of the scene of last week as the beginning of this week's scene. So we got basically overlap on the two scenes. So like when Ravager is attacking Diggle, she says her line again that we heard her say last week, and then she kicks Diggle and knocks him down, and then the scene continues. So makes me think they kind of shot a lot of this stuff at the same time. Oh, and remember last week I was talking about Ravager's costume and why there was something weird about it, but I really couldn't quite put my finger on it.
Uh-huh.
So after watching last week's episode again, looking at some stills, and then this week's episode where you get to see her costume more, what's weird about it is that her forehead looks huge. It's really that it's kind of like sticking out from her face. And I don't know if that's just a function of the way the mask is or the way her hair is underneath it or something like that. But that's what is really bothering me about it. It just makes her look like she's got encephalitis.
Yeah, I kind of told you I didn't care for it last week either. And the shape of the way it goes down on her cheeks doesn't help that enlarged look. I agree. It almost does look like she's got some hair tucked under there, which is surprising because she's got it all sticking out the back too. But
exactly. Yeah. So I don't know. Anyway, that's what that's kind of what was bothering me most about that. All right. So I kind of already mentioned Argus. This seems to be the biggest threat facing our heroes. The fact that Argus has pulled into town very much like I guess it was the Dark Knight, and they have blocked off all the bridges and tunnels in or out of the city, trying to, you know, basically keep the Slade's army contained because, as Amanda Waller says, if these people get out, I mean, that's it. That, you know, that could completely change the way that the world's going to work, which is interesting. I find the fact that you know, Argus is, you know, really trying to that this doesn't exist elsewhere in the world. Obviously, the universe that DC has here, on at least on TV, you know, they don't have maybe a Superman yet or any other superpowered people, because they are really trying to keep this threat contained to the city. I was just kind of thinking about that, you know, and the fact that you know, no one else has talked about superpowers in any fashion. Right. So,
and no, yeah, I don't think they have anything like that in this universe, or at least at this time in this universe.
Right.
The most superpowered kind of thing is anybody that's got the Mirakuru in them.
Right. And it'll be interesting to see, like, once Flash comes on the screen, if that's going to affect what we see on Arrow as well, if there's going to be a continued relationship between the two shows and the shared universe, you know, and people hearing about all this crazy kind of stuff going on in Central City, and that's going to just kind of continue to up the ante. Though,
well,
we can't really do that with Oliver. You know, Oliver kind of has to fight people that are relatively powered to him.
Yeah, to a point. I mean, I think that's always kind of been something that the writers of any Green Arrow comic had to address, you know, because Green Arrow does not have superpowers. So, but he's in the comics, he's fought some people with superpowers, you know, and much stronger than him. But it's his wits and his I don't know how you describe it, but it's just his skill with the bow and arrow that we're able to maybe use their powers against them. But what I was going to say, you know, at the beginning of this season, or when we found out, you know, Flash was going to be kind of involved somehow, we had kind of talked, wondering if they were going to go that superpower route. And I think the way they've done it, number one with the Mirakuru, and number two with the use of Star Labs, I think that would be a fairly easy transition to do. Anytime you put some, you know, scientific facility in a story that does, you know, weird things, mm-hmm. you open yourself up to the possibility of having weird things in the show that wouldn't necessarily be in the real world. So I think they've used Star Labs enough in Arrow that would be okay. So I hope I want to believe that because I hope that there is some sort of involvement with Flash in this.
I'd love to see a crossover episode where it's like Flash comes to an Arrow episode and Arrow goes to a Flash episode. You know, like
that would be cool.
Two-parter.
Kind of like the old Green Arrow, Green Lantern comic mm-hmm. series, because that was so much exactly. fun.
Yep. So anyway, so Argus is locking down the city, and basically they've sent in a drone strike of the GBU-43B bombs. They've got six of those, and they are going to basically take out all of Starling City. Wow.
Really?
well, okay, so let's look at it from this way. You've got this government group that is, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where, as far as Argus goes and, like, their charter and where they are and, like, do people really know about them, you know, in the same way that people know, like, about S.H.I.E.L.D. in the Marvel Universe, you know, or the CIA or the FBI or anything like that. You've got this quasi-military, you know, potentially secretive group that, you know, found out that there's anywhere between, and numbers keep varying every time somebody talks about it. There were parts where the episode quoted, and again, it's just all people saying this, so it's, you know, it's not necessarily that there are errors in the episode, it's just nobody really knows, but there are 20 men that are on Mirakuru, or there are 50 men that are on Mirakuru, or there are 200 men that are on Mirakuru. There were different numbers that were sourced by different characters. So anyway, but there's all these superpowered people, and Argus is tasked with, you know, protecting the country and as Waller says, even the world, to keep these individuals from getting out. So is destroying an entire city the right thing to do?
Are you asking me? No, I don't think so. I mean, it seemed a bit extreme to me. And when I think of Starling City, I don't think of like a sprawling Los Angeles kind of size city. You know, I mean, I think more of a Denver, you know, or a Kansas City or something, you know. So I don't think it's massive, but there's still millions of people in it. And I don't know. I mean, she seemed legitimately concerned about the power of the Mirakuru army, I guess, that they couldn't be stopped by more conventional ways, I guess. But I don't know. It still seems awfully harsh, awfully extreme to and
as
quick.
A first option, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so that kind of threw me a little bit, and I know why they did it in the show. I mean, they needed something serious, and they needed Oliver to have a time frame, a short time frame in order to do it. But man, I don't. I don't know. I think that was too much.
Well, I mean, it really harkens back to last season when you know. The city was – part of the city was being destroyed, you know, internally by internal forces. And now we've got basically the whole city threatened by external forces. So, you know, there are a number of people within the city that have to, you know, fight to help it survive. One has to actually question from this episode, is the city – the thing that Oliver loves, the other person, quote unquote, that Oliver loves. I was a little confused if we were supposed to believe that, because obviously the city is something that Oliver loves. We realize that. We find out that Sebastian Blood really loves the city as well, in kind of another twisted sort of way. But they broach the subject of the other person that Oliver loves that Slade is going to destroy, and you know, basically Sebastian said it was whoever he loves the most, and well, that appears to be the city. But do you think that Do you think that's correct? Is there another interpretation of that? Is it actually a person that Slade's going to kill?
I think it's a person. Okay. And I think we'll find out at least who. I don't think we'll find out what happens to him, but I think it's a person that we'll find out next week. It seems to me like the city, destroying the city, was all kind of part of the original plan, and now it's kind of coming to fruition. But I don't mm-hmm. think that that's who Slade meant as the last person that okay. He had to destroy. I don't know. So I don't think he thinks Oliver's going to die or anything in this attack, and I think he's going to try to torment him one more time with whoever he's got in mind. Which, I mean, you know, it was kind of laid out to us that it was his child. We're assuming a son, but we don't know that for sure.
Yeah, that was my guess from the other week. I don't know. I guess we'll have to see. But just going back to the Argus thing too, I agree that, you know, they're setting this up to give Oliver a limited amount of time in which to do this. He has till dawn. We don't know really what time it is, but I think it was, I can't remember if it was in this episode or if it was in the preview for next week's, at the end of the episode, you see a drone flying in, and it's still pretty dark too. It's like, that is not dawn yet. Dawn is, you know, there's sun when it's dawn. I'm sure it's going to be one of those things where it's like, you know, just at the last second, call off the attack, we killed him or whatever, or we used the cure or so.
Okay. All right. I'll go with it. Too much for me, but I'll go with it.
Well, that's what would be the most dramatic, right?
Well, yeah, I guess so. It doesn't have to be. I think they could come up with other options, but, you know, it's and I also kind of felt Batman-y to me. But
I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, I was seeing some posts online this week. Somebody was talking about Arrow and trying to describe it to somebody else. I said, basically, it's Batman on TV. They just call it Arrow. But really, if you just think of it as Batman, then you'll be okay. I'm like, that's not really correct.
But. No, not really. I mean, it's got some similar thematic elements from the Dark Knight movies. But hey, it's I like
well, the comics
better.
Are similar.
I they mean, are similar.
They are similar.
They
characters.
Always have been.
Yeah.
For even from the origin, when he had an Arrow cave and an Arrow car and an Arrow plane and a sidekick named Speedy. They've always been similar. So, but that's I great. Like it better. That's just me.
All right. Well, as you mentioned in your brief at the beginning, we had different stories for every character here, except for Roy. Roy got it easy again. He got to sleep through the entire episode.
Yeah. Well, he had a small dramatic scene at the end. He didn't have to do anything, but, you know, it was about him.
His shoulder really worked that scene.
I heard he was nominated for Best Dramatic Shoulder.
But, okay, I'm going to go down through some of these characters, and I just want to have you give me some feedback about what you liked, you know, or what stood out in this episode
okay.
for you. Okay.
All right.
So Felicity Smoke.
Well, Felicity, as always, love Felicity. And of course, she has mastered now that she's not always in front of a computer and goes out with the team, she has mastered the art of quippy butt kicking. So I don't know that I've ever laughed out loud as hard and long as I did in an Arrow episode when, you know, I guess, should we call her Ravager or Isabel?
Yes.
When Isabel was pontificating about her detest of Felicity's mugging, she comes in and hits her with the van. That was awesome. And then, of course, they cut to her and, I thought the airbags would go off. Oh, that's just – okay. So anyway, I just love her.
Should I hit her again?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Lovely. I don't know what it is about her that brings just the right amount of humor to this show without being so campy and far-fetched. I mean, it's just – it's who her character is. It's
I'll
how
tell
she
you,
talks.
Emily plays – she's written with the jokes, but I think like – any good comedy, she is playing it totally straight in the moment. She's not trying to wink at the audience and go, hey, I know I'm doing a joke here.
Yeah.
She is like, she's petrified, and she's like, whoa, you know, I just hit somebody with my car. And she plays it like she's in shock, kind of.
Well, it's so natural and so real. Like, I mean, you would really, you know, you might know somebody that would react just like that in a situation, you know. And she is always kind of running off at the mouth. That's how she's always been, even when we first met her. And now it works so well in those situations. If anybody else in the show tried to make a pun or a joke like she does, it just wouldn't work. If Diggle tried to have a snappy comeback like that, it just wouldn't work. So anyway, I love Felicity, and I have to say she did a really good job of inspiring Oliver at the end, you know, and in a really dramatic way where there was no real humor to it, you know. I mean, it you really felt her emotion to it. I thought he was going to kiss her for a second. Did you think he was going to kiss her?
I did, yeah. And that was just, I mean, that
that's probably
was
good
a
that
really
he
heartfelt scene.
Yeah, yeah. So, lover, love Felicity. She grounded this episode, I guess. Maybe that's a good way to describe it. She just, she was a huge help. You know, she got the Star Labs guy to come in, and I mean, you know, it didn't work out so well, but I mean, that was all.
Yeah, she got the Star Labs guy killed.
Well, it's not her fault.
Off your horn. Oh, crap. You know,
I think they were on their way anyway. I mean, he was sitting there screaming.
That's right.
I think
that's right. Slade was listening in on the whole conversation, so yeah. Right, he had his guys coming. So, but yeah, I mean, I think you could arguably say that nothing would happen in Oliver's life properly. Like, he would be worse off without Felicity. She is the one that turns everything around for him and is there for him emotionally and, you know, to bandage his wounds and stuff like that ever since the very, third episode, I guess. So
I would say that there is no way he could have continued to do what he's doing now without her. I really don't think. Even with Diggle, I don't think he could have done it.
A lot of emotional support, too.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, Laurel Lance.
Laurel Tony Robbins Lance.
Ah.
She's all about the motivation the last couple weeks here, huh?
You know, once she sobers up, she's a pretty smart cookie.
She is. Well, we knew that before she was drinking, you know, at the beginning of the season. So, man, she just went up. You know, first she revealed that she knew who Sarah was.
That was a great scene.
It was a great scene. I'll back up to something in a second, but since we're talking about Sarah, that was really good. That was really good in how they played off on their relationship, and then she goes on to really inspire Sarah and show her that she truly is and can be a hero. I'm glad they hit that milestone because I wasn't sure where it was going to go, and now I'm really dying to see what Sarah does with that. I don't know, though. It the way Laurel was played in this, and I finally like her again.
Yeah.
It's not looking all that good for Sarah. I hate to say it.
I was afraid Sarah was – when Sarah rescued the girl and she comes out of the burning building, I'm like, uh-oh, she's hurt.
Yeah.
Like she's going to stagger. She's going to hand the kid back and then she's going to collapse or something. But well, that's not what happened.
And it's not, but I get the feeling that I'm going to have that feeling every time she's kind of put in mortal danger now. Because
remember what happens when a character achieves, you know, their – you know, true happiness, right? It's like, oh, you know, I finally understand everything about life, and this is exactly what I want to be. And then they walk out and get hit by a car. I mean, that's
that Felicity's driving. So. Yeah, I think it'll be more dramatic than that for Sarah. I think it'll probably be like a sacrifice of some kind if they indeed, you know, kill her off. I think that they have established a character enough where they really wouldn't have to have Laurel being Black Canary. Although, I mean, that's, you know, that's what it is in the comics, and that's what we've always kind of assumed would happen. But I don't think they have to do that. I mean, they've certainly changed enough in the Green Arrow universe.
When Kitty Lotz first showed up, I was not in, entirely taken with her, but now I can't picture, you know, I can't see her not in the series.
Yeah.
She's really integrated herself.
I agree with you. I agree with you. And I mean, I thought she was okay at the beginning, but now, I mean, she seems like a natural part of the show. So much so that I actually kind of missed her last week.
Yes. Well, because we were saying, where did Sarah go?
Yeah.
With Laurel, I saw this little interesting tidbit. So we've got Roy, who is, you know, always wearing this red hoodie and apparently seems to be set to take over as kind of a sidekick with Oliver as a Arsenal or Red Arrow or something like that.
No, Speedy,
we've got
huh?
Thea, who is nicknamed Speedy, which was Green Arrow's original sidekick's name. And then in this episode, we've got Laurel, who's wearing a red jacket, and she gets a chance to use a bow and arrow and does a pretty good job with it. Not that, you know, she's aiming at a big wall of rubble. Fred. But
Barney, you've got an arrow in you. All right.
So, but I'm just wondering if they are working to maybe make her someone like Artemis, who is a female archer from the Young Justice series. She's actually the daughter of the villain Sportsmaster and the Huntress. So that wouldn't necessarily work here, but I just found it interesting that she was wearing this red coat, firing an arrow, you know, helping Oliver out and stuff like that. I wonder if they're trying to tease something there.
Hmm. There you go. You could keep your canary and have Laurel do something important too.
Yep. Yep. So we'll see about that. All right. So, Detective Lance, he's
Yay!
Back. Very excited about that.
I can stop making that mistake again.
Now I'm going to be calling an officer. Yeah.
So. He proved himself finally. I mean, we knew what he was capable of and what he deserved, but in everybody else's eye, man, he took that leadership role right there. I did have a question though, and I don't know how this works, but is detective really the proper title for what he is? I mean, to me, detective seems like somebody that's going to go out and investigate stuff. Why didn't he make him a? Was it the captain that made him?
So, yeah, the captain was the one that re-promoted him. That the black guy is the captain. Yeah. That
so
one.
Can you make him like a lieutenant or something? I don't. Like I said, I don't know how it works. It just seemed like detective now. Okay, well, whatever. At least he's not officer anymore.
Yeah, I mean, detectives are, you know, they're the guys that wear the plain. Well, the only thing I know about police work is what I've seen on TV, right? So I'm not going to try to pretend like I know what's going on. But, you know, he's going to be like a guy in Dragnet.
Oh, Dave, either way, he can go back to wearing, you know, loose ties and, you know, plaid shirts with a sport jacket, that kind of thing.
Exactly. What else? I'm thinking next season, all of our characters that are like have actual jobs are going to move up, you know, to fill like holes above them in the leadership chain, because the captain is probably going to move up, and because the chief is dead, we found out. Laurel may move up because the DA is dead, which is that was too bad. I was sorry to see them kill off Kate Spencer.
Yeah, that was sudden, but
So
that's how it works in Starling City, huh? If you want a promotion, the guy above you just has to die.
This is the third mayor that's died.
Yeah,
in 2 years.
So who takes over? It's not the DA. We know that.
Well, it'd be the deputy mayor, but I mean, pretty much everyone in the office was killed off. They're going to have a special election or something like that.
It's like some 12-year-old, like a block away or something, is next in line.
No, they'll probably do something where it's like, you know, we need someone to step in as mayor, and I can't even think of a good, just a supervillain's going to step up. You know, someone that we're going to know is like, you know, oh, this guy, his name's, you know, T Joker, and he's going to. Yeah. I don't know.
Tom? Ted?
Tom Joker. Yes.
Yeah, they can't even look in the phone book for some guy named Mayor, because he died too.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah. Well, like I said, most dangerous job in Starling City.
It appears to be. But I think I'm glad the captain finally sees the value in Lance, and, you know, the value in Oliver. It's like we were talking about, you know, the doctor giving Oliver the medicine last week, presumably for free. You know, it's all these people are finally putting their faith in him because he just continues to fight. And that's, you know, he's fighting for everybody, even when, you know, the odds are against him. That's, he's providing the hope for Starling City. So,
yeah, they're still going to run into that problem of, well, but he's breaking the law, but, which they probably will, but
I would like to see them address that because I think that's an interesting aspect of it. You know, in a realistic series like this, okay, so how do you deal with this guy? He's technically a vigilante, but you've got these, you know, some crazies out there that are, some of them are superpowers, some of them have superpowered weapons and stuff like this. You know, how do you handle that as a police force? You know, sometimes you need to go to extreme measures, and I think that would be a really interesting arc that they could explore a little bit more next year. Too.
Well, so. And where do you draw the line is who you let do that stuff, because I won't say anything, but if you saw the preview for next week, there might be some other help that has done a lot of lawbreaking. So we'll talk about that next week.
But. Okay. All right. Yeah, don't want to spoil too much there for people that haven't checked it out, even though I will tell you that I watched the trailer thinking that it was going to be the one I saw at the end of the episode again because I just wanted to see that.
Uh-huh.
No, entirely different clips, and I was like, oh my gosh, they just showed me so much stuff.
Yeah, you gave me a little warning, so I haven't watched it yet.
Okay, my brain broke after watching that because I was just thinking of all the... I just saw things that, you know, suppose that certain other things have already happened, and they're like, whoa. So, anyway... We'll talk about that more next week.
Does he have like the drone mounted on his wall or something? That something like that? No,
that would be pretty funny. They're driving away in a van, and the drone's chasing after him. So we
all right
already. Yeah, that's my Benny Hill shtick for the week.
I got it. That was good.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just explaining it for all the people that have no idea what Benny Hill is. So I'm sure if you don't know who Benny Hill is, go ask your parents.
YouTube it because it's
or
funny.
YouTube. Yeah, yeah.
If you're of age.
so we already talked about Sarah a little bit, and while I felt it was great to see her back, and I really enjoyed the what we got with her this week, I felt that everything that she did was very telegraphed, from her, even up to the point at the end where she walks back into the police station.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's this officer. It's like, boy, did you hear this blonde save this kid from a burning building? She's a real hero. And then everybody looks. It's like, and you can see Sarah's like, that's me. You know, it was just, I enjoyed the talk with her and Laurel. And the fact that, again, it wasn't a huge surprise we found out what El Al-Safir, I think, or whatever her Arabic name is. But it means canary. I don't think we knew that, right? We didn't know that from the previous time. We just knew what she was called, this other name, right?
I don't remember hearing that before. And I tried to look it up. I couldn't find how to spell it. So yeah. I didn't put it in the show notes. Sorry. I looked a lot of places. But, I did. I don't remember... Now, I say that, and it's been a while since I saw the episode with Nissa Al Ghul. I don't know if she called her that when they were talking, but I don't remember.
I don't think so. I want to say, though, that I assumed that that's what it meant, because it did not, you know, it's like, it seemed, well, of course it means canary, you know, kind of thing. It's, and she dresses in black. She's a black canary. But. Anyway, that'll be interesting to see if, you know, what else they do with that. I appreciated the fact that you know, Laurel called her the canary. That choked me up a little bit when after she said, who was that lady? It's like, that was the canary. I'm like, oh, that is so nice. You know, it's a long time coming, I think.
I actually kind of like that scene. I know everything else just seemed a little bit forced. I mean, it was almost like, you know, all those hospital dramas where the doctors are having problems and then, strangely enough, they have some patients come in and they're having similar issues, and they learn a lesson from them, you know. But but you know, I did kind of like the whole I don't know what you'd say introduction of the canary, you know. So great idea. I just thought some of it seemed forced in the situation.
Okay, so let's move on to Thea, because she had some really good sequences here, and of course ended the episode very dramatically. So what do you have to tell us about her? What do you have to say about her?
What do I have to say about her? Well, she's still a little bitter. But I mean, geez, you can't blame her there. She's kind of in a bad situation where she almost may not have a choice to accept his help. And yet, you know, we're kind of led to believe that she chose not to anyway. I'm not convinced that that's actually what happened, but
That which happened?
I don't know. That you know, he – well, he's obviously – I don't think he's dead.
But okay, well, sorry, I'm a little confused by what you're talking about, so let me just get this out in the open. Do you think she shot him at the end?
No.
Okay. I do not either,
I didn't know how much I should say about that. So, but no, I don't think she shot him.
The to me, because we could see the muzzle of the gun, the flashes appeared to come from off-screen, and there was nothing coming out of the muzzle of the gun. You know, because when they do those gunshot, they always make sure that you can see, you know, smoke and flame or whatever come out of the gun barrel.
Right.
So I'm thinking somebody else shot him. Now, I don't know anybody else that really uses a gun on the show, you know, that would be killing people. Okay, I take that back. I do know one guy that uses a gun. He's pretty good with a gun. And he only has one eye. So... but I don't know what he would be doing.
One eye. That doesn't really narrow it down on this show.
he's got a cybernetic eye.
Oh, yeah. Okay, okay. Gotcha. Okay.
I don't know what he would be doing going after Merlin. But, of course, you know, anybody can hire him. You know, because if you can find him and you can hire him. he's in the Sterling City Underground.
I want to, you know, also remind you that the League of Assassins is after him as well.
Right, but that's the thing. They don't really use – well, I mean, they may use guns, but
– no, yeah, I suppose.
We see him with swords and arrows and stuff like that. You know, a very noble sort of old school assassins.
Yeah, so. Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I think that whole scene there was probably way different than it was presented to us, and we'll find out more next week. Probably really, really quick next week.
It was confusing. I think. I mean, I found it confusing. I enjoyed the. Again, I felt there was a little overhype on the drama of it. You know, take my hand. You know, I mean, he's just really, it's like, come with me. It's like, yeah, I know what you're saying, Dad.
Okay, so there was so much amazingness in this episode that the few parts I didn't like definitely, you know, get overshadowed by how much I did like it. But there were really some things. The thing about Sarah when she was in the police station and they're, you know, talking like that, that bothered me. Just a few little things that I didn't buy. And I hate to say this, but the whole part with Merlin talking to Thea was really hard for me to swallow. You know, the, who are you? I'm her father.
Yeah.
It's Merlin, man. Just shoot the guy and move on. You don't, you know, you don't monologue to him. It's,
Well, it's what's really interesting. I mean, I feel that this is a really interesting chance for us to see a different side of Thea, because she's been pushed away from everybody that she thought was her family. The only thing left to her, apparently, is her biological father, who's a jerk and a sociopath and, you know, tried to kill off a good large portion of the city last year.
Right.
And so, like, this is one of those things where it's like, this is, you know, this is how villains are made, right? So, you know, Thea goes with him, and then, you know, she will be Oliver's downfall next season. I mean, it's that's probably way over dramatic as to what it will be, but I think there is an opportunity to do something fun where, you know, Thea gets some kind of, you know, not revenge, just, you know, she wants to get
she,
back at Oliver.
She gets some training towards a completely different point of view. Is that, you know, mm-hmm. I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, they're going to turn her kind of bitter and angry, like you can do with people that have had issues.
Right.
You know, to me, there's two kinds of villains. There's kind of the maniacal villain, power hungry villain, and there's
like
this kind that. Okay. Yes.
Zoolander.
Yes. For sure. and then there's just misguided ones, and I can see Thea going that route, despite the fact that was completely opposite of her character all season. But
yeah.
But
she's
just
got
because,
nothing, right? Her
yeah. But I mean, and that's part of my problem with this. Number one, with Merlin, he was appealing to her emotionally, which I'm not sure was the best way to kind of go about doing that. If you're going to bring Merlin back, I would make him more stern and strict to say, look, you have nothing. This is the situation you're in.
Well,
you stay here, you're going to die. I'm with you. You're my daughter. I'm not going to let anything happen to you. Don't try to be nice to her and
see,
hope she's going to like you.
But I think this was the best way. I thought this was a good way to go about it. You know, him sugarcoating the whole thing, and you know, he's coming at her like a friend, and that to me says that there's an ulterior motive, I guess. You know, like,
yeah, that makes sense. I can see where that,
you know, it's one of those, you know, it's like you catch more flies with honey than with vinegar or whatever. It's just, you know, he's
I
don't know how much he's been paying attention to what's going on. Obviously he knows enough about what
he knows everything.
She's up to, right? So there's wheels within wheels.
And you know what? I mean, and they can play it like that, and I'll be fine with it. I mean, I'll go along with it. It seemed out of Merlin's character to me. And maybe it's been too long since I've seen him. Maybe it's not out of his character, but
he's been dead a while.
Well, that's true. You change. You change when you die. And this is just me personally coming from my own point of view in my life. But man, you know what? She needs to kind of wake up. I mean, I know she's gone through a lot. Thea has gone through a lot, but she doesn't have nothing. I mean, you look at you compare Oliver to Merlin alone. You know, I mean, she's got other people. She's got Walter. She could get Roy back. You know, might take a little work. She's got other friends, but you compare just Oliver to Merlin. Yeah, Oliver lied to her, but Merlin's done a heck of a lot more than that. I mean, he lied to her for many years. You know, she's his daughter, and he killed lots of people, and he was a powerful, angry, villainous man. And I mean, Oliver just lied to her. He's her brother. Brothers lie.
Not really, my brother. You're not my brother. Stop. So. Well, you mentioned mentioned Walter. I know where he's been this entire season. He's actually a general in the military now. I saw him on 24 last week. So he's
well, no wonder he's not around. He's busy.
Yeah, and he doesn't have his English accent anymore. It's weird. He's like pretending to be this.
Wait a minute. Isn't 24 based in England now?
It is. So, but it's that the Americans are over there. It's like an offshoot of the CIA. The president's visiting, so he brought some of his, you know, military advisors with him. And
let's see, who could we get to play this American guy in England? How about that English guy?
Yeah, I did find that humorous. So, anyway, it was cool.
I have
cool to see Colin
taped the first episode. Haven't seen it yet. I'll check it out.
Very intense. Very intense. Much more intense than Arrow has ever been. I don't know if I can actually stand watching that show. I've never really watched 24 before, so that'll be interesting.
Oh, really?
Right.
Oh. I was a big 24 fan last four seasons.
Oh, okay.
There, so.
So then you know what you're in for. I was kind of unaware of how tense it got.
Well, this might be a good chance for you because there's not 24 whole episodes this time around. So.
Yeah, that's what I understand. So. All right. Before we run out of time here, let's get down into Sebastian Blood, because he, I think, had, I mean, I'm a little confused about this character, and we've talked about him off and on throughout the season, where he seemed like a strong contender for a villain. Then Slade was introduced, and he kind of took a back seat and disappeared for a while, and then he comes back.
And actually changed, I thought, once Slade appeared.
He what?
He changed. Oh. He didn't seem as strong. I mean, not even just because you could see Slade was pulling the strings. I thought his character itself just seemed weaker.
Well, and this episode, I mean, I feel like he's actually had some kind of psychotic break. I mean, he seemed different than we've ever seen him before in this episode. I wanted you to talk a little bit about like what you were seeing with him, and did he seem out of character?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, he was almost taking the mayor job too seriously. It's almost like, okay, now I'm mayor. So, you know, that whole hobby of starting this cult of these crazy army guys, I'm going to put that aside for a while, concentrate my efforts on this lovely city of mine. I'll tell you exactly where I felt that is when the crazy Miracru guy came in and had the DA, you know, in the headlock. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I am the mayor of this city. I mean, like, that would really be something that would sway the guy. I mean, what's he going to go? Oh, geez, mayor, I am so sorry. Here you go. Here's your DA back. I mean, it didn't feel like him. So, but then again, he is kind of a crazy guy. He is.
Well, I mean, yeah, he went back and killed his mom.
He did, but. See, he's one of these villains who I think, I don't know, he's kind of almost a cross between my two definitions of villains. Maybe my definition of villains is not very good. but, I mean, I don't know that he really ever did want to be power hungry so much. I think he really thought he could save the city, but he was misguided in the way that he wanted to do it. He thought, you know, he thought he could do whatever he needed to do in order to save the city, as opposed to, say, a hero that we've talked about all season that will have to sacrifice certain things, feelings, a life, your life, mm-hmm. loved ones, to do what's really right to save innocent people.
Well, what was interesting was that the speech that he gave Oliver there at the end very much mirrored the speech Oliver had just given and with Felicity when they were kind of talking at the bell tower, at the clock tower. Mm-hmm. But when Blood said it, like when Oliver said those things about why he, you know, felt that he had failed the city and what he wanted to do, you know, it felt very from the heart and he was sad. And when Blood was saying those things about how he really, you know, cared for the city and that he wanted to protect it and all these things, dude sounded off his rocker.
Yeah. He had lost it at that point. I think he was so desperate and backed into a corner and knew he'd lost the control he thought he had, or he realized he never had that control.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
Do you think he really thought he'd get away with it? Like, I think I had the same idea when that Oliver did, because he's like, and then when this is all over, I will make the city, I'm going to rebuild it, not just like it was, but better. And I'm like, dude, you have totally gone off the reservation.
Yes, I do think he thought he was going to get away with it. I think, you know, when people are like this, they get to a point where they're so desperate to believe what they want to believe that they can't see it any other way. Even when they are shown that they are wrong. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, even when people have a belief and they're shown evidence that what they thought was true is not true, mm-hmm. they refuse to change their mind. And I can see somebody like Blood being like that.
I don't believe that's true at all.
It's true. I'm telling you, I have evidence here. There's been studies. Nope. I'm going to forward you a link. Nope. I want you to read it. I have these conversations with an older generation all the time, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure. I thought you were going to say you have a conversation with your students who are like refuse to.
Uh, you, you know what? That too.
Got to go in both, that's both usually, ways. Huh?
So. That's usually most. They just won't admit they're lying. But.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. okay, so I've got two other questions for you because, well, the first one is, do you think there's something else that's going to happen with the persona of Brother Blood, the mask, because they followed when the mask fell on the ground, you know, they lingered on that shot. And I'm just wondering if that's one of those kind of foreshadowing elements or if they're just showing that, you know, he's dead and the mask is cast off from this character, because they were talking about the revelation, you know, he would reveal who Oliver, if Oliver revealed who he was under the mask, he would do the same for Oliver. And so now that revelation has come and the mask has fallen off of him, you know, figuratively.
I could see it going either way. Now, when I watched it, I took it as, hey, this is a dramatic shot of this guy dying. Here's the last time you'll see it because he's dead. But I could see it going your way, too. And there's certainly enough of a following of that character. And I don't mean the character in the show, but the actual character in Starling City, right. You know, to for that to be a problem.
Yeah.
We'll see. I don't know.
Is he really dead?
Oh,
it's always one of those questions. Like
the one question you and I have a hard time answering anymore. I think he's really dead.
Okay, so I feel that he's really dead. But should they want to bring him back, I think this may be what would happen. Mirakuru, the cure, the Mirakuru, fixes everybody that's affected. And then there's a little bit left somewhere, and it somehow gets into Blood's system, and he comes back to life. But he goes away, and nobody knows that he's got superpowers, and he does something, and he'll be back later, potentially. I don't know.
Do we know he didn't already have Mirakuru in him?
That is a good question.
I mean, was there not that he ever... I would say the only evidence to say that he didn't have it was that we just never saw him do anything.
Yeah, we never saw
like
him
that.
In a fight. We never saw him do anything.
But does that
deal?
Mean he doesn't have it in there? And I, you know, you can get stabbed with the Mirakuru. That doesn't necessarily mean you'll die. I mean, Slade got stabbed in the eye.
Yeah. I mean, and he would bleed and stuff, but he would just heal like Wolverine would or something.
So, I mean, I don't see any reason why he couldn't have already had it in him and he could come back.
So you're definitely saying yes.
I'm kind of changing my mind. I do still kind of, like you, I still kind of feel like he's dead. I feel like it kind of, and again, I think that's kind of what the establishing shot was with the mask.
Right.
But,
I feel he served his purpose in the show, but then I felt the same thing about Merlin, too. But, you know, but they've now found another reason to bring Merlin back because he has a daughter, right, that we didn't know about. So,
right.
Interesting. I don't know.
How are you even alive?
And did you notice Merlin had something around his neck? He was wearing some weird kind of charm or something. My son thought it looked like a vial. It was like a little green. It wasn't a crystal.
That.
It looked like a little. It was something on a chain or on a rope around his neck, like a amulet, maybe. But it was skinny.
Maybe you get that the first time you die.
Instead of like a little
teardrop.
Like
it's
like a prison tat. You get a little League of Assassins necklace.
Yeah, congratulations on your first resurrection. Something like that. I don't know. You add one for every time you...
I wonder if in the DC universe they've got, you know, when you go to the greeting card section, you've got Mother's Day, birthday, congratulations on your first resurrection. It's like, oh, Flash, sorry you died. Welcome back. It's, you know, signed Superman. Yeah,
you know what? I remember the first time I died.
Yeah.
they should definitely have that in the DC universe. And they'd have Green Arrow, they'd have Superman, Flash,
Batman,
they could have all kinds.
Green Lantern.
A Batman's just a, you know, hope your back feels better.
Well, hope your back feels better. And then he was misplaced in time recently. So they thought he was dead, but he was just misplaced in time. So
there needs to be a cartoon of the greeting card section in the DC universe.
And then before we run out of time, let me just, I have to mention Anatoly before we get completely away from this episode, because I thought, his camaraderie with Oliver in this episode was great, and you know they're going to see each other because Oliver has to learn Russian from somebody at some point here. So
yeah, and they're definitely his BRFF.
BRFF?
The best Russian friend forever.
Nice. All right. Well, let me get on to a couple of these references here. Like you, when I hear Streets of Fire, the first thing that comes to mind is the Michael Paré film from 1984 called Streets of Fire, which is subtitled A Rock and Roll Fable. With Willem Dafoe in it. It's got some great music in it. If you guys haven't seen it, it's a musical. It's basically a musical, but it's more of like a rock musical. And the guy that wrote the majority of the main songs in it is the guy that writes music for Meatloaf. So it's very epic, kind of epic rock and roll songs and stuff like this. So that's the first thing I think of. The city in that is kind of a dingy, gritty city, very much like the way the Glades portion of Starling City is portrayed and stuff like that. There are some influences there. But what I found out is that Streets of Fire is a song on Bruce Springsteen's album Darkness on the Edge of Town. And just so happens, Darkness on the Edge of Town was the second-to-last episode of last season as well, which I hadn't put that together. Huh. So I'm thinking next year's penultimate episode is either going to be called Badlands or The Promised Land. I was just looking at other songs on the Darkness on the Edge of Town album, and I think those look like ones that could potentially be titles for Arrow episodes. So we'll have to come back here in 12 months and see if I'm correct.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
I like that they're doing something like this. So obviously somebody on the production staff is a big Bruce Springsteen fan. I'd like to find out who.
Hmm.
So because maybe there's other elements, maybe we should be looking into more of the boss's songs.
Well, hey, as you're out there on Facebook and Twitter, if you know anybody on the Arrow production staff, ask them.
Yeah.
Hey, do you like Bruce Springsteen?
And then I saw a Pulp Fiction reference with the when Slade opened up the Star Labs briefcase, and there was the glow coming out of it. You know?
Oh, okay.
You know when because the briefcase in Pulp Fiction, you never really see what's inside. There's just that glow coming out of it. So
right.
I thought that was kind of a nod to Pulp Fiction. Maybe not, but it was set up very similarly. And I'm glad when they ripped the briefcase off the dead guy that they didn't take his hand, that they just broke the chain.
That was nice of them.
Because I was afraid they were going to come around and find just like a bloody stump. And I was like, oh, that's going to be gross later.
Because that would hurt,
yeah.
Too. Poor guy.
And then we got a couple other references for DC and the 52 number that they use a lot. So Officer Lance used his call sign Delta Charlie 52 again. And then also there were some reports, I think it was at the police station, they were talking about 5th and Adams and 2nd and Kingsley. And so the 5th and 2nd would be 52. I believe these are also references, the named streets would be references to Neil Adams, an artist at DC. And then Kingsley, I was doing some looking. This may be a reference to an older DC artist named Norton Kingsley. Now, I'm not sure about that, but there was a guy named Norton Kingsley that did some art on something called the Mystery Men comics way back in the, I think it was the 40s or the 50s. So that may be a shout out to him, but I don't know. I couldn't find anybody else named Kingsley, and nobody that I know of that has worked with the Green Arrow character here at least fits that name. So, or it could be Ben Kingsley. Maybe they're just big fans of Gandhi. So
that maybe that's who's going to be mayor next.
I think that's it. I'm just looking to see if have any other notes here, but Yeah, I think that's pretty much it for this week's. Oh, do you have something else?
No, yeah, that's. I mean, there was so much in this, and next week we're going to find out what happened to the army, and you know, I mean, they're just as the DA found out. I mean, they're becoming a really big pain in the neck. So they're going to have to find some way to stop him, and I think they're going to need some extra people.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the actors referenced next week's episode. I think it might be Paul Blackthorne, the guy that plays Detective Lance. See, I almost called him Officer. I've been calling him Officer now for so long. He said next week's episode is going to be like all the characters are thrown onto a trampoline and they all kind of spring back up, and you're not sure who's going to land where. So
that sounds dangerous.
Yep, I'm looking forward to another thrilling season finale from Arrow next week.
All right.
So, well, I guess that's all we've got for this week's episode of Green Justice.
Oh man, that's it, huh? That was a lot, but we hope you enjoyed all of that goodness. And if you did, can you do us a favor? Please get on iTunes and give us some good reviews. We'd like to see lots of good reviews to spread the word. You know what? You can also get a hold of us at email. We love getting your emails. We read every single one of them. Send it to us at greenjustice@randomchatter.com. Or you can also get on our Facebook page, at Green Justice Pod. Or you can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/Green Justice Podcast.
Yeah, the @GreenJusticePod, that'd be our Twitter, and then the other one's Facebook.
I said Facebook, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah,
that's okay.
I meant Twitter.
It's all the internets, you know. They all get to us.
It's that whiplash.
You can also check out our other show, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which is following the newly renewed for Season 2, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and that's also available here on randomchatter.com. And, of course, if you enjoyed the podcast, please be sure to tell all your friends about us, because that's the only way we're going to continue to grow. And remember, if you don't keep listening, Oliver, you have failed the city. This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.